Welcome to Unbreak My Chart, the podcast that tapes the top 10 and talks about it at school the next day. I'm Laura Snapes.
And I'm Fraser McAlpine.
How are you doing, Fraser?
I'm really well, really excited. We've been meaning to set up a podcast about the charts for quite some time, haven't we?
Yes, and I don't know if this week is a blessing or a curse, a sign that we should have started sooner before the singularity arrived.
Yeah, it's a weird thing because obviously this is a perfect way to launch a new podcast about the charts. But the whole point was we were talking about something that nobody was talking about, you know, in terms of and paying attention to a metric for music success that had been sort of discredited over recent years. And then all of a sudden, all anybody is talking about is the fact that Ed Sheeran's album is going to dominate the top 10.
And the fact that maybe it should be discredited as well. Like, even he seemed, you know, Ed Sheeran is somebody who's like not afraid of talking about numbers and about chart domination, but even he seemed slightly sheepish about the fact that he has 16 songs in the top 20 and 9 in the top 10 and 3 albums in the top 5.
Surely he shouldn't be allowed. Although what I would say is that I did a little bit of research about interesting chart statistics, and during the heyday of Beatlemania, the Beatles were in the top 40 with an album, a whole album.
Oh, wow.
Had sold enough, with the Beatles, sold enough to get into the actual top 40, because at the time, the singles chart was the chart for the greatest amount of records sold. Because singles were so dominant in sales, they had their own chart, but it wasn't like the format of the single that made it chart eligible. It was just how much they'd sold. So with the Beatles, had sold ridiculous amounts in its first week, and it made it its way into the top 40. So this sort of thing isn't as unprecedented as it seems. And what's fascinating about this week as well is that there is a gap, so it's left the bar open to be leapt over by somebody else to release an album that dominates the entire top 10, because there's one song that isn't on the Ed Sheeran album
the record hasn't yet been broken.
Yeah.
Obviously you've got this Beatles one, but do you remember any kind of particularly wild charts from when you were younger?
Well, I grew up during the big 16-week runs, you know, the Wet Wet Wets and the Bryan Adams runs, where it felt like stasis. It felt like music had stopped, you know, for weeks on end, 64 months with the same song at number one, during a period where songs being at number one felt like a massive deal. And there's been a few things like that. And obviously the last big chart shakeup was the Rage Against the Machine campaign to take over the Christmas number one from the X Factor.
I remember when, I should have actually looked up the exact detail of it, but when the first download only number one happened, and it was this tiny band that nobody had ever heard of, and they had a really rubbish name, like Kevin or something. It wasn't Kevin, but it was something like that. And everybody was very excited, like, maybe downloads will truly democratize things and bands who are just releasing their own music will have a chance at making the top spot, when I think literally the opposite has transpired.
Well, I mean, that's a fascinating point, isn't it? And especially when you mention downloads, which are must be the fastest format for music that's come in, dominated the charts and then vanished, because, you know, people aren't buying downloads anymore. Those little MP3s, they've gone. It's, you know, there's a far bigger market for vinyl, and for even cassettes are making a comeback, but I don't think anybody's pining for the good old days of the MP3 compared to, you know, constant streaming.
No, totally. I was actually in the car listening to the charts the week before when Stormzy's album was number one, and I really noticed that they said these are the songs that you've been, what did they say? Like, I think they said streaming and downloading most of this week, but they didn't say buying, and I thought that was interesting kind of semantic choice.
Yes, it's no longer a commercial thing, which in a sense is why this is a timely podcast, because now we are literally just talking about audience response to an artistic stimulus, which is music. It's not about commerce. It's not about who's getting the most money out of this. For any artist listening, you know, this is perhaps upsetting news, you know, because we're not going to be talking about who's going to be the richest or whatever. And certainly Ed Sheeran isn't doing badly out of what's going on at the moment. But this is the metric that powers the chart at the moment is popularity, which is an entirely different thing.
Yes, I wrote this, so I'm just cannibalizing something I've already said, but it's like if you were to rank like supermarket purchases, like the things that people always want will always be at the top, and there's very little room for that ever to get dented. It does kind of confirm a thought that I've had lingering for a while about how pop at the moment just seems slightly like an arms race. It's not about anything as kind of as quaint as chart positions, but everybody just seems to be gunning for A, gunning for total domination, but B, when you hear Ed Sheeran talk about how, like, he knows the only thing that's going to unseat him this year is Taylor Swift potentially releasing an album at the end of next year, it's almost like empire being carved up among a select few, and they play the game together so that they can coordinate releases and give themselves all a bigger slice of the pie. But the gap between what they're doing and kind of the next tier down of musicians is so vast that there's just no breaking into that top tier.
Although there are, and this is again why the top 10 is always fascinating, there are nameless dance acts, and there are club classics and strange genre quirks that will always just suddenly burst out of nowhere, take over, disappear. You know, Trop House is all over the top 10 at the moment. Every single, you know, that isn't an Ed Sheeran song, you know, that's doing really well is probably has some footprint of Trop House in it.
Also, an Ed Sheeran song.
Yeah, exactly. And so is Shape of You by Ed Sheeran, which has got that as well. So, I mean, just to give some sense of the format of how this will be on a week by week basis. Normally, we will do the rundown, obviously in reverse order. We're not monsters, from 10 to 1. And we will talk about the songs that are in the charts, and then have a look at maybe some of the songs that might be in the following week, and round off with a little chat about songs that will be in our personal chart based on our own streaming of music over the previous 7 days. This week, we're going to have to start grouping the Ed Sheeran songs into themes, because just to talk about, and this next song is by Ed Sheeran, would be quite boring, and we, you know, we're aware of that, and this, you know, this is not a tribute to Ed Sheeran podcast.
Not yet. We don't know how the rest of the year is going to pan out. I was actually getting my hair cut while the charts was happening, so I couldn't listen to it live, but I imagine it was one of the more like farcical hours of radio that's ever existed. I would quite like to go back and listen to it.
I mean, especially as these are the songs that everybody's been listening to. The chart has always had that slight element of, why am I listening to this? I've been listening to these all week. Even more so now that streaming has taken over. But even more so, if all you've been doing for the past week is listening to the Ed Sheeran album. So it's just another hour of that same album again. Incidentally, I had a quick look. The Irish top 10 currently, all 16 of the top 16 are Ed Sheeran songs.
No.
There isn't even, it's not even broken up by anything.
And Galway Girl is number one, isn't it?
That's right. And Ooh. The number, so it goes Galway Girl, Shape of You, and then Nancy Mulligan, which is the one about his grandmother, which is way down on the UK top 10, but right up at number 3 in Ireland. So they've that record's already been done in Ireland. So we've still got time, all of you, you know, potential chart toppers of the future, to knock Ed Sheeran off his lofty perch. Unless next week the Chainsmokers and Coldplay fall out of the top 10 and Ed remains.
Yeah, so for this week, hopefully in this week alone, instead of starting at number 10, we're going to start with number 7, which is, I think, probably the only time I will ever be grateful for the Chainsmokers' presence. It's the Chainsmokers and Coldplay with Something Just Like This.
So that was Chainsmokers and Coldplay and Something Just Like This. And I think we just have to send a message to Chris Martin and say, don't put yourself down. You are a superhero. In the week that Ed Sheeranized everything, you were the sole hangouts. You were the sole nail upon which, you know, we can all hang our hopes that this isn't just a complete whitewash. So you are Superman and Batman and all those other people that you were singing about in that song. The nice thing is as well, and also it means that this is the nice guy top 10, because, you know, Ed Sheeran is all nice guy, and then there's Chris Martin, who I think genuinely probably is a nice guy.
Yes, I think that there is a big difference between the kind of small n, small g nice guy that Chris Martin is, and the capital N, capital G nice guy that Ed Sheeran is. There is, interestingly, whereas Ireland has gone for the obviously very Irish tracks that he's put on the album in a totally vindicated attempt at Irish success, the Brits, English people have put more bitter songs in the top 10, which I don't know what that says about our national character, but we shall dissect them in appropriate genre segments.
Yes, absolutely. So let's explain how we've broken these up. I think we've got sort of Drippy Sheeran, mm-hmm. which is Supermarket Flowers, which is a very emotional tribute to his mum, written riddled with specificity about that particular relationship, and Perfect, which is essentially thinking out louder. written specifically for people bored of that one song, and has no specifics or very few specifics in it whatsoever.
It's bonus just, John Mayer solo.
And if you love that, if you love a John Mayer solo, it's you know, a really good example of that kind of thing.
Yeah, I never think of Sheeran as a great soloist. He always reminds me of what we met in Cornwall. I am from there and you have lived there for a very long time. And he always reminds me of the kind of people who play beach bars in Cornwall all summer long. And their favourite trick is to like finger pick while kind of playing percussion on the guitar at the same time.
Yes. Well, you know, he was Niz Lopi's guitar tech. Niz Lopi of the
Oh, was he JCB actually song. He was actually their guitar tech. I thought he was just like their only fan.
No, Lord. How cruel. How cruel. And the interesting thing about that, because this moves us quite neatly on from Jippy Sheeran into Sappy Sheeran, and there is a difference, which is there's a song "What Do I Know" and "Castle on the Hill" are the two that are kind of in this idealistic, innocent frame of mind. And I love "What Do I Know" because it really does remind me of a Nuki Surf Shack open mic night, where everybody is big Niz Lopi fans, and he's singing a song about how people are really into money these days, and I'm just not into money these days because I've got songs and I've got the music. But the way he sings "Stock Market Crashing" sounds like he's singing "Star Monkey Crashing," and I find that enormously pleasing. Both times I was listening to the song earlier today, and both times I got it wrong in my head, even though I know what he's singing about. It's like, why is he singing "Star Monkey"? Oh no, it's "Stock Market." We could change this whole world with a piano, add a bass on guitar, grab a beat, and away we go. I'm just a boy with a one-man show, no university, no degree, but Lord knows everybody's talking about exponential growth and the stock market crashing in their portfolios, while I'll be sitting here with a song that I wrote saying love could change the world in a moment, but what do I know.
That was Ed Sheeran's "What Do I Know," which is part of the Innocent Sheeran guise that he has on this record, which I think is very key to his success. Everybody thinks Ed Sheeran, he's such a nice guy, he's a lovely dude, he likes to talk about how down to earth he is a lot, and I'm sure he is genuinely a really, really, really nice man. But there's something about the way that he kind of encodes that innocence on this album, which is, I find, deeply, deeply suspicious. With Castle on the Hill, he likes to talk about being very nostalgic about how he's going to go back to where he's from and he can't wait to be there, and he talks about this hill where he rolled down as a kid and then he got drunk on and had his first kiss on as a teenager, and it's all kind of very bucolic and nostalgic. And then on "What Do I Know," which I find a highly disingenuous song, he sings about how his daddy told him that he shouldn't get involved with other people's political quarrels and that he should just spread a love of like a message of love and positivity, which yeah. You know, is kind of fair enough, but also it's the ultimate hedge sitting, whichever one of those things it is.
You're probably more comfortable on a hedge. I think that also it's a straw man argument, that thing. Like I think I possibly musically have more time for Ed Sheeran than you do, and you know, as I'm allowed to, it's perfectly fine. But I did listen to that song going, is everybody talking about stock portfolios? I mean, are they really? Who are you hanging out with?
That's what I thought. Who do you spend time with?
That is constantly talking about stock portfolios. They're not. They're just not. They're talking about other things. And for somebody who is positioning themselves as an everyman songwriter to not, just to put that in as something that he's cross about, when and I guess it's because actually secretly people aren't really talking about it, but they suspect that other people are, so that song is written from the, you know, for the people who look at other people and go, oh, I see you're into money, I'm not into money actually, I really like coffee.
Well, this is the thing about Sheeran, like on his, I can't pretend to be like super familiar with his previous records, but I did have a good look at all of the lyrics for them, and on those albums he's much more candid about his own personal situation. He talks a lot more about alcohol and a lot more about being a bit of a mess, and it just feels like slightly more, I hate this word, but like just a bit more honest, like he's actually disclosing something about himself. But there's nothing personal on this album. The only way that you find out about Ed Sheeran on Divide is the way that he condemns things that other people do, and he's always implying I'm not like those people, whether it's not being like people who are really into money, or whether it's how his girlfriend is an angel and she's not like those awful conniving girls who just want to like walk all over him.
Which moves us nicely onto our next grouping together of the Ed Sheeran songs in the top 10, which is Bitter Sheeran. And Laura, which songs are sort of represented under that grouping?
Well, in Bittersheerin, we have got Dive, which is currently at number 8, which is about how, you know, he's really headstrong in love and he's prone to throwing himself in head over heels with people who, you know, aren't really there to catch him. And then there's Happier, which is a frankly very creepy song about how he's trying to accept the fact that his ex is happy with someone else, but really he can't stop thinking about her all the time, looking at all of her Instagram pictures and trying really hard not to click on them all. It's quite intense.
And is then, that not the one, that is the one that ends with him saying, "And I'll be waiting for you when you..." Or is that New Man? One of them.
In Happier is the one where he's waiting.
Yeah, even though at the beginning of the song he says that he broke her heart. So he's split up with or cheated on or done the nasty in some way on the person he's singing the song to. And I'm prepared at this point just to stop and point out that Ed Sheeran in this song could just be a fictional construct. It's perfectly fine that we're not necessarily talking about the real Ed Sheeran. But at the beginning of the song, he's like, "I know I broke your heart." And at the end of the song, he's like, "I'm waiting for you whenever your new relationship breaks up. Here I am." And it just seems a little threatening.
Well, it is, yeah, and it doesn't, you know, this maturity, this patience doesn't really last very long, because on the album there's Happier and then straight after it is New Man, which I think we should listen to my favourite part of, because it is frankly extraordinary.
I heard he spent £500 on jeans, goes to the gym at least 6 times a week, wears boat shoes with no socks on his feet, and I hear he's on a new diet and watches what he eats. He's got his eyebrows plucked and his asshole bleached, owns every single Ministry CD, tribal tattoos, and he don't know.
Well, that was Ed Sheeran and New Man, currently sitting at number 5 in the top 10, and a startling couplet of imagery there, in which he basically just says, "Oh, I think your new beau is not a proper man like me, and is effeminate and likes things that are not..." I mean, this is classic paranoid, again, Newquay surf bar people who are paranoid about other people who are just getting on with their lives. The dig about the Kardashians is interesting as well, because it's the one thing that people can always... anything that we say about Ed Sheeran at this point comes across as being the bitter ramblings of two music journalists who don't understand what popular music is, i.e. it's popular. But actually, the Kardashians is popular. You know, so whatever argument that you could level at defending Ed Sheeran, apart from artistically, you could argue at the things that he's railing against in New Man. So Ed Sheeran, you're the new man, actually.
I was very surprised in this that among the various crimes that this ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend commits is not listening to indie records that are much cooler than Ed's. I mean, this is very much like, you can really understand why he and Taylor Swift are friends.
This kind of, a little bit chippy.
Yeah, very chippy, slight underdog kind of mentality. But it's that... it's the way that they kind of consistently try and hang on to innocence and present themselves as victims all the time that allows them to get away with stuff that's quite nasty under the radar, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think Dive is actually fascinating. Dive is probably my favourite song on the album. And partly because of the curdled way his voice tears itself apart in the choruses, as if he really, really means it. And while he's singing, "Don't call me baby unless you mean it." And it's a kind of, again... it's one of two songs that I think refer back to Thinking Out Loud, and it's the Thinking Out Loud for someone who's too paranoid to commit, which is just really interesting. That to me is, you know, it's not quite on a par with Pulp releasing This Is Hardcore after their celebrated success, but it is a curdling of what felt like quite an optimistic spirit on his last album, and that to me, I find that song actually quite moving. That, which is a quite a pompous way of saying it. I find that song moving. I really like Dive. I think it's a good song.
I should say something nice about the album as well. If I had to pick a favourite song, I think it would probably be Supermarket Flowers. I thought of, you know, we've said that it's quite possible that Ed Sheeran is not singing about Ed Sheeran, the real man, on these songs. He's just singing about, it's kind of a fridge magnet poetry assembly of a man. But I did actually think that the picture that he paints in Supermarket Flowers was quite affecting, and I could really see it. I think it's about the death of a grandparent or something. I think one of his mum's parents, and he talks about having to, it seems like a grandparent who might have been ill for a long time. And he talks about having to collect up the photo albums and take down all the cards and put the dying flowers in the bin. And I did think, kudos, that is a very relatable song.
Well, the more specific he is, actually, often, the more he gets through, he cuts through. because that is, you know, and it's like that line in Sing about being handed a bottle of water filled with tequila, or as I sometimes hear it, a bottle of what I thought was tequila. Either way,
oh, that's quite dark.
Yeah, who knows where that's going? But that, just that one tiny detail is like, actually, that's a really giddy romantic image to throw in the middle of a drunken liaison. And I think with you're right, with Supermarket Flowers, you know, if it's not actually about his mum, it's about missing a parent and you know what it means to not have them in your life anymore when you're doing other things. And it all, the more specific those details are, the more universal the song becomes.
Yes, which is a trick that he has tried to employ on the first of our two songs in the next category, Genre Sheeran, where he kind of breaks away from this like John Mayer acoustic guitar tapping thing to try something else in a totally admittedly contrived way of winning more fans, which has been very successful for him because these two songs are at the top of the charts. Galway Girl is at number two, and this is Ed Sheeran's tribute to the vast Irish diaspora, in which he is very specific, and he talks about going on a great night out with a boozy gal in Galway, and they drink Guinness, and they drink Jameson's, and they drink John Powers, and they listen to Van Morrison, and they dance a Kaylee, and this girl also plays the fiddle. Which just seems like a checklist sent to him from the tourist board, as opposed to any kind of specificity that would actually be that make up anybody's life. But the
she watches Father Ted.
Yeah. But the thing that really got me about it is like it's just this assault of Irish brand names and like Irish stereotypes. And then at the very end of the song, when they're done with their night out and they're going back to her apartment, they go and they drink white wine and eat Doritos. Which just seemed very off-brand. I mean, he could have at least said Tato, and that slightly rhymes even.
It would fit the same area, yeah. It's an odd thing, because he does like to write songs about picking up girls when he's drunk. And then there are all the other songs, the sort of sappy songs about, you know, loving someone forever in a kind of totality of love. But they are interspersed with these. Anyway, I chucked her in, and now I've met another girl while I was drunk, and I'm going to love her forever. But I think that you've got Galway Girl, which as you say, aimed at so perfectly aimed at a target market. It's number one in Ireland. And I think just to break character a moment, you recently wrote a review of this album in which you posited that he could just keep picking countries all around the world and throw in very specific local details about a girl that he met in a particular bar in everywhere from Azerbaijan to New Zealand, and just keep writing the same song over and over again.
Yes, I will admit that there were several more suggestions of songs that Ed Sheeran could write about girls from different countries that were edited from that review because it was deemed that one example was enough. But I particularly liked the idea that he might meet an Austrian girl and saying, "She's the girl I have chosen. She looks lovely in lederhosen." I was very pleased with that, but it got cut.
You see, there's a future ahead of you setting songs to, you know, people who need Ed Sheeran type songs.
Yeah, it was astonishingly not very hard to write. But saying that, I couldn't actually. He obviously does have a very strong way with melody. And I suppose that is something that we should talk about. I'm not really super familiar with his other albums, but do you think he's doing anything kind of any kind of musical progression on this album? Because you know the other one's much better.
I don't think so. No, I think this is the placeholder third album in which bands cash in, the money is coming in for this one. You know, melodically it doesn't push much further than Plus or Multiply, and I think Multiply had a greater stylistic range because it involved, you know, collaboration with Pharrell on Sing, which sort of pushed Ed Sheeran away from that idea that he was the open mic night loop pedal acoustic guitar guy, you know, and into sort of, and it put him back at the, because right at the beginning of career he was doing, you know, collaborations with grime artists and all sorts, so he's always had that kind of slight grime slash hip-hop element in his music, but the breakthrough stuff reduces that significantly, and there are moments of sort of that on this album, but sonically he's not pushing out anymore, and it's very, very similar to Adele's third album in that respect. It's very much kind of, this is the album you've been waiting for, and it, in that respect, it delivers on all fronts.
Yeah, but while it does also consolidate their success massively. I also wonder how much of a hamper it is on what they're going to do next. I think it's really interesting that with both Ed Sheeran and Adele's most recent albums, both of them showed early versions of the record to the producer Rick Rubin, and he told them both that they had to go back to the drawing board because he either didn't believe them or the songs weren't good enough. And especially in Adele's case, I think she said that she'd been writing a lot more about motherhood and the situation she found herself in there, and those were the kind of songs that she was told to take off. And so it just seems like the personal nature of the music is being slightly stripped out in an attempt to reach as many people as possible. And although they're both, you know, having massive success at the moment, it doesn't really seem like a sustainable strategy.
Yeah, I think you'd have to, it's fine if you're the kind of artist that's going to keep banging out records every 2 years. It'll buy you that 2 year gap. But over time, there's going to need to be something else, or maybe we're just wrong. I mean, that's the other thing. You can't say this is in any way a disappointment when we're talking about an album that has dominated the listening figures to such a degree. But so anything that we say is sort of walking on eggshells in that respect.
Yep, totally. Well, we haven't talked about the number one, which is Shape of You, which I only realised that it was Ed Sheeran when I heard it about 3 weeks ago. I've been hearing it for ages, but it was not a sound I associated with him, and I was very surprised to learn that that's what it actually was. What do you make of Shape of You?
I really like Shape of You, actually, and it's grown on me hugely. And I'm not surprised that it's the song that was the trailed the album, because it's the one that sonically pushes him in a different direction the most, which is into, you know, the current chart sound, which is Trop House. And it is a successful attempt at that, you know, much more so than some people have managed. I think it's really interesting. I saw him doing the Radio 1 Live Lounge performance where he loops everything up, played the whole song by himself. And it's such a skeletal music anyway. There's sort of, there's very little in it, so you can definitely do that. You know, the voices are the sort of the most ornate section of it, that he tracks them up in big blocks of harmonies. I guess ultimately, you know, if I sound like I'm less than enthused, it doesn't, you know, someone singing "I'm in love with the shape of you" is such an odd message. I don't think I'd swoon if anybody said "I'm in love with the shape of you." You know, and I can understand what they're saying. It's an attraction without knowing. But there's something in that just makes me go, I'm going to need a little bit more than that before we start the snogging, Ed.
Yeah, it's a bit like evaluating livestock at the Royal Cornwall Show or something.
Oh, we should get him to sing it in a proper farmer accent. That would be amazing. Trop House with a Cornish accent.
So next week, do you think we're going to see much change? There are very few challengers and climbers that are actually in the charts at the moment.
Well, I suppose the biggest thing, but I don't know if it's going to chart. I genuinely have no idea what's going to happen with this, is that Steps are back. And it's a song which is proper Steps, as in it sounds like post-dance music ABBA. Specifically, you know, Lay All Your Love on Me. And it's for all that, it is wonderful. But I don't know. It's like when Keisha, Mutcher and Siobhan got back together, you know, as the Not Sugar Babes. You were thinking, well, credibility wise, this is perfect. But is it something that will trouble the charts in the way the Sugar Babes used to? And I don't know.
I think that the Steps comeback song is much stronger than the Sugar Babe or the MKS comeback song, which was, it was kind of elegant, but it was elegant in that kind of Dev Hynes pop music kind of way, which I do like, but it has not yet proven to be commercially successful in any way. Whereas I think that, you know, this Step song is a banger. It just depends, I suppose, how it's being promoted. Because with comebacks like this, you know, with bands who were kind of very manufactured at the end of the 90s, which was definitely what I was into in about 1998, there's always, as good as the song is, maybe this is bad to say, but there's always like a slight element of sadness where you think, what are the motives here? Who needs the money? But it is a very, very good song, and I hope that they're not tainted by that.
Yeah, I think ultimately pop music is not the it's not the forum for worrying about where the money goes, because from the very start of popular music, it has been going into the pockets of gangsters and people that you wouldn't want to pay money to, and that in a sense has continued right up to the present day. You know, whether these people are gangsters or not, it doesn't matter, but they aren't. I try not to think about that stuff too much. It's literally as a musical statement, does it do what it's supposed to do? and I guess we'll come to talk about this in a minute with the Lord single as well. You know, pop music's job, the essential of pop music is to pick you up, is to take you somewhere, it's to be visceral, it's to sound silly and brilliant at the same time, it's to dazzle, and it's to also have an element that sounds slightly barely controlled. And I think everything bar that last one is in the step single.
Yes, totally. And if I was going on some kind of night out, which I don't really do very often, I would definitely want to dance to the Step single and the first Lord single rather than anything off that Ed Sheeran album.
So let's talk about that, because that was one of the things that you wanted to mention was the Lord single.
Well, yes, each week we will talk about what would be at the top of our own personal streaming charts. And I think mine would definitely be Lord's Liability. I mean, I'd probably Greenlight very close, but I think I've listened to Liability a little bit more. I'm so excited about this album. How are you feeling about the singles that have come out so far?
I love them. I just love them. Everything that I just said then about pop music was written down in response to listening to Greenlight, which is why I was able to reel it off as a list, because I just thought, well, what is it that pop music does? Because this does it. Why don't, you know, and it does it in a way that is, it almost feels like a blessed relief to hear music that does that still, that is new. And that should be hugely successful. Again, I don't know whether it will be, but it should be, because it seems to me that it fulfills the brief admirably.
But then Liability, I think I like that one a lot more. It makes me think that you know, she's internalized a lot of lessons from David Bowie. There's something in the way that those piano chords fall in that song that really reminds me of his chord progressions. And it just, the way that she's singing that kind of devotional to herself and talking about how she's always going to be too outsized for anybody to want to come near her, it reminds me of the way that Bowie sang Kooks to his newborn son, but it's like she's singing a version of Kooks to herself, which I find really, really comforting.
Is one girl swaying alone, stroking a cheek. They say you're a little much for me. You're a liability. You're a little much for me. So they pull back.
My single from the last, the song that I've streamed most over the last week, is an older one. It was out earlier this year, which is the song Wedding in Finisterre by Jens Lekman, who's a Swedish singer-songwriter, and he's very good. And this song is particularly in a kind of Paul Simon vein and features a chorus that is wordy in the extreme, which is the longest simile that I imagine that pop music has ever produced.
She said, like the 5-year-old watching the 10-year-old shoplifting, 10-year-old watching the 15-year-old's French kissing, 15-year-old watching the 20-year-old's chain smoking, 20-year-old watching the 30-year-old's vanishing.
What other chart contenders have we got? There's Little Mix, who I think were one of the only other new entries in the charts with no more sad songs, which is a bit like a riposte Shape of You, because they're saying, you know, I'm not interested in your hands on my body, actually, thanks very much. But it doesn't really have a lot to say for itself.
It's for oddly muted, isn't it, for Little Mix? I always have them as down as... I know this is a word that is thrown around hatefully, but they are sonically quite feisty. And I always like that about them, but this isn't. In fact, oddly enough, the Martin Jensen's solo dance, which is rising up the chart and may cause some damage towards the upper end over the next couple of weeks, to me sounds like Little Mix doing Trop House, which is essentially what Little Mix are doing with their current one.
And then at the total opposite end of the spectrum, a single that is coming out this week, which might end up in the charts, is Ariana Grande and John Legend's contribution to the Beauty and the Beast soundtrack, which for some reason, when I read about it, I thought, I know they might have done some kind of newfangled take on it, but no, it's just Beauty and the Beast from Beauty and the Beast, sung very lavishly and beautifully.
It's a live action recreation of something that already existed with live action people doing it. So it's fine. John Legend's no Peebo Bryson, but then again, who is?
So yeah, one of these guys might be our Lord and Saviour next week, but otherwise we could just hope that the chain smokers cling on.
Yeah, cause if we have to do this again next week with 10 Ed Sheeran songs, there may be problems. And we tried to make this good cop, bad cop as well, and I'm fairly sure we failed. So that brings us to the end of the first Unbreak My Chart. If you have things to say, anything you'd like to throw at us about Ed Sheeran or any of the songs mentioned in the podcast, you can email us at unbreakmychartpod@gmail.com. We're also on SoundCloud for comments at soundcloud.com/unbreakmychart. And both of us are available on Twitter. Laura, you are?
@LauraSnapes.
and I'm CSI underscore pop music.
And we may be on iTunes soon, but they take a while to approve new podcasts, so who knows, but we'll definitely be on SoundCloud. But we do really want to hear from you. As the weeks go on, we want to include more reader reviews so you don't just have to listen to us blathering on. So please get in touch with anything you have to say about Ed Sheeran or anybody else in the charts. Anybody else right now would do.
We're not desperate. Okay, see you next week.
See you next week.